gonna be like three little Fonzies here. And what's Fonzie like?
Cool.
What?
Cool.
Correctamundo. And that's what we're gonna be. We're gonna be cool.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. The pursuit of cool has preoccupied our culture for decades. It may have started as an American quest to spread around the globe. Now everybody wants to be cool. And therein lies the rub. To be cool is to be indifferent to status and have an effortlessness that would be instantly destroyed by appearing to try too hard. Slate magazine just wrapped up a month-long series on the nature of cool in 2013. Dan Coyce is senior editor at Slate and a contributor to the series that looked at the history and future of what we define as the ineffable but instantly recognizable concept of cool. Dan, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
Just listening to Miles Davis's 1957 album, The Birth of the Cool. So he named it. But where did the cool actually originally come from, the word and the concept?
Well, it, of course, originally referred to the temperature, right? It referred to not warm, not hot, not cold, but just cool. It's climatic moderation, you know? But that, of course, is tied into the way we think of cool now. You're not too hot, you're not too cold, you're right on the level, you're cool with whatever. And by the time of Shakespeare in A Midsummer Night's Dream, it was already being used to refer to sort of a moderation of emotion, a moderation of tone. Theseus tells Hippolyta, lovers and madmen have such seeming brains, but such shaping fantasies that apprehend more than cool reason ever comprehends.
Hmm.
But by the 20th century, of course, it meant not just a moderation of your emotions, but it meant a whole attitude, a whole posture. And that came, it seems to our writers and to most historians, that it came from African-American culture and then moved its way into sort of the majority monoculture to mean something more than just being okay with stuff, but having a certain je ne sais quoi about you that others might try to aspire to.
Which is so interesting, looking at, especially in the 1920s, certainly, when some of the first blues songs, cool, kind, daddy blues, and that kind of thing were coming up in American popular culture. This was an era rife with, you know, lynchings, with riots against African Americans. So they become the standard bearers of cool, while the most maligned population. What's going on there?
Well, there were sort of two parallel cultures happening at this time, right, in America, which is that the vast majority of the monoculture was discriminatory towards blacks and excluded them from society, but within sort of a certain area of, I guess you could call it early hipsterdom, that was where the cachet was. That society was what a certain class of people attempted to emulate. You know, and so there's always been a tradition of popular culture moving from the outside into the inside, right? And it happens even today. You know, the way that mainstream America deals with, you know, sex and drugs and anything that was once a lot more difficult for the mainstream to handle is now a lot different. And that's because things move from the outside to the inside. And this was just the beginning of that process, was the jazz and the fashion and the attitudes of a certain otherwise ostracized population were nevertheless moving their way into the mainstream.
Mm. We saw beat culture, later hippie culture, white people appropriating this kind of idea of cool. Looking from 2013 backwards, as you and so many other people on your staff did, what makes something cool?
Well, the easiest explanation of it, and one that doesn't really encompass everything about cool, but is sort of a great shorthand of looking at it, was Seth Stevenson's, which is not fully appropriate for radio, but is just not giving a darn, right? You know, it, simply not caring what other people think of you. And his example is Prince, right? Prince clearly does not give 12 darn. As Seth says slightly more vulgarly in our pages, he doesn't care what you think about him, and so he will wear purple frilly, ruffly whatevers, but it doesn't matter because he's so amazing, he's so cool that he can get away with it. There's that aspect of cool. Then there's the aspect of cool, which is simply sort of aesthetic, minimal elegance, right? You know, Mark Joseph Stern for this series wrote a great piece declaring the coolest thing that anyone has ever worn the coolest fashion item that has ever been worn, and he declared that it was Cary Grant's sunglasses in North by Northwest because they're a little bit awkward as a fashion object. They're a little bit big. They have these sort of weird green lenses, but he wears them so effortlessly and perfectly, and they work so well with his look and the image that he puts forth in that movie. He wears them in the train scene when he's seducing Ava Marie Saint, that they, by that nature, become sort of the epitome of coolness, of mid-century coolness that people are still trying to evoke today.
You feel you've seen me somewhere before?
Mm-hmm.
Funny how I have that effect on people. It's something about my face.
It's a nice face.
You think so?
I wouldn't say it if I didn't.
Oh, you're that type.
What type?
Honest.
The sunglasses are part of a sort of toolkit. You know, the dangling cigarette, the leather jacket. You know, I'm thinking of Marlon Brando or James Dean. But it's interesting that the idea and concept of cool has endured. But we don't say, you know, what a swell bunch of fellows, you know, or groovy,
right,
or dope. But we still,
yeah,
say cool. Why has that lasted?
Well, that's a totally hep question, you know. it's lasted, I think, because it's flexible enough to be updated, you know, from era to era. You know, the rebel cool of Marlon Brando is not exactly the same as the funk cool of the 70s, but they share a certain attitude. They share a certain sort of spirit. In the same way, the term is flexible enough to be sort of appropriated in the 90s and in this century by the tech world.
We're speaking with Dan Coyce, senior editor at Slate Magazine. He's a contributor and has been working on this series, a month-long series, about cool and what it means now in 2013, looking at aspects of fashion and attitude and dance. And you, as you just mentioned, technology, internet and social media expose things much faster and wider than culture has ever been able to move. So how long is it possible for something to stay cool?
It seems like you can measure it in seconds for many things, you know, and it sort of depends on your perspective. If you are 23 and you live in Brooklyn, then Haim, you know, the band Haim, was cool in June. But they're already not cool anymore. But whereas if you're me, a 38-year-old guy in the suburbs, Haim just started being cool like yesterday.
Well, that's part
but
of
it. I'm hopelessly uncool for thinking so.
But that's kind of the catch-22, right? That coolness wears off as soon as everybody else recognizes it. You can be wearing like skinny jeans tucked into boots, and that's cool, and then they're selling it at the Limited. You know what I mean? Or everyone's wearing it at the mall, and it's no longer cool.
Right. Well, it's even more than just when you recognize it. It's like the second I wear skinny jeans, they're no longer cool. and so I think that's sort of the fun of exploring this, is trying to understand why it is that something moves from cool to uncool while it has differing levels and has a differing evolution throughout its life. And, you know, that makes it, if you are really a cool hunter, right, if that is something that you want in your life, that makes it a real challenge to stay up to date. On the other hand, you can also argue that if you explicitly are a cool hunter and definitively want that in your life, you are by definition uncool. Mm-hmm. Cary Grant wasn't trying to be cool. He just was cool. Prince isn't trying to be cool. He just is cool. If you're trying that hard, forget it, man. You're totally uncool.
Well, and you're also pointing out something, that it is not a permanent state, you know, because it does evolve.
Yeah.
I mean, John Travolta as Tony Manero in Saturday Night Fever, cool. John Travolta dancing with Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction, what do you think there?
Oh, that's still cool. That was like a reborn cool.
All right, how about Battlefield Earth?
Right, John Travolta showing up at a premiere now, not cool. But we can still look back at those and see and experience their cool again, even with, you know, the ephemeral nature of that in the forefront of our minds. We know that John Travolta is no longer cool, but you can still watch that scene in Saturday Night Fever and be swept up in it enough to understand how amazing that seemed in 1979. You know, I can understand why people looked at that and said, oh man, I want to be like that.
We just washed the hair. You know, I work on my hair a long time, and you hit it. He hits my head.
earlier on, you said, you know, cool, not trying too hard is the sort of capsule definition. Maybe that's something we've known for a long time. What have you learned while working on this series? What's been explored and revealed to you?
I would say my favorite exploration that we've had in this series was a really forceful defense of the coolness of being deliberately uncool. David Greenwald wrote it for us. And his argument was that the constant churn and ephemeral nature of coolness and the constant battle to keep up with it that so many people are participating in all the time, it's just a trap. You know, it just means, as he wrote, that you're succumbing to whatever peer-reviewed focus group that you are subscribing to, even if it's the cool kids, you're still just following the herd. Mm. And so if the real coolness in the world is doing what feels right to you and not caring what other people think, then you should free yourself to, you know, love as David Greenwald does, to love not only Haim, but also, you know, emo rockers like Paramore or sort of mainstream country like Casey Musgraves. Find the things that you like and follow your arrow, as Casey Musgraves sings, wherever it goes, and embrace your uncoolness, because in that direction lies true satisfaction and, really, you could make an argument, true cool.
Dan Coy, senior editor at Slate Magazine, where you will find Cool Story. It's a series of articles, interactive features, and slideshows exploring the elusive nature of what it means to be cool. And Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
You can find a link to the series and listen to a cool versus uncool quiz that I played with Dan after our interview at wordofmouthradio.org, on our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio, or on Twitter, at Word of Mouth. And we'll leave you with the song The Wire by Haim, a trio of Jewish sisters whose indie rock band may or may not be cool right now, depending on where you live. After the break, what if Apple or Google had been in charge of the healthcare.gov rollout? We'll ask a couple of techies how the big players might have prevented the Obamacare web disaster when Word of Mouth continues.